Today, on this episode of the PeerDirect Special Spotlight.
When you're treating atopic dermatitis in special populations, how do you think through biologic selection? What pushes you towards one option versus another?
Today, Drs. Sisis and Unger join the podcast to discuss personalized therapy in atopic dermatitis in this PeerDirect Specialist Spotlight. All opinions expressed are those of the presenters and do not necessarily reflect the views of this educational initiative's supporters.
Hello, I'm Rahuva Sisis, Assistant Professor of Dermatology at Icahn School of Medicine at Mount Sinai in New York.
And I'm Benjamin Unger, also an Assistant Professor of Dermatology at the Icahn School of Medicine at Mount Sinai.
Thanks for joining me today, Benji.
It's my pleasure to be here, Rahuva.
Today, we'll discuss how we personalize biologic therapy for atopic dermatitis in special populations, especially older adults, young patients, and those with significant comorbidities. As biologic options continue to expand, including IL-4 and IL-13 targeted therapies like dupilumab and lebrikizumab, as well as itch-focused agents such as nemolizumab, the question is less, should we use a biologic, and more, which biologic best fits this patient's profile and priorities?
Exactly. And in these patients, factors like age, comorbid disease, symptom drivers, quality of life impact often play just as big or in some cases even bigger a role as the eczema severity itself. So, Rahuva, when you're treating atopic dermatitis in special populations, how do you think through biologic selection? What pushes you towards one option versus another?
When I first meet a patient, I like to understand how their disease affects them, how much it bothers them, how it impacts our quality of life, what their lifestyle is like, what comorbidities they have, and take all of this information together to work with the patient to select the best therapy for them. So I want to know, is this impacting their sleep? Are they very itchy? Do they have other atopic comorbidities? Are they not sleeping at night, or are they having trouble having, paying attention in school and doing their work? So taking all of these things together to make the best therapeutic decision for my patients. And also considering, would they prefer an injectable or an oral medication? As we have a lot of options now, we want to provide the best options to our patients and make the best selection for them.
Yeah, so I think that we're very aligned with this. And what you're describing to me very much is the idea of, personalizing treatment selection and shared decision-making, really understanding for the individual what's going to be the best option for them. And if you line up 10 people, they're going to have 10 different kinds of considerations that come into play. And so certainly, things that play a role are comorbidities. If they have asthma, that might shift our thinking, towards one versus another. As you noted, sleep disturbances, age, risk tolerance, in injections versus oral medication. So I think a lot of these things really play a role. And ultimately, kind of working through that with patients on a one-on-one basis is how we end up. So what are some of the starting points for you when we think about that? Maybe how do you decide biologics or orals?
That's a great question. So first option is going to be, are you even able to take a pill, right? So if a patient's not able to take a pill, that wouldn't be an option. For most of my patients, we are starting with biologics. We've had biologics available for a long time. We know that they really target that type 2 inflammation. However, I will again address with the patient, is this something that would work with their lifestyle? And if they're not comfortable doing an injection, a pill is always an option from the start.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that plays a role for me is thinking about how targeted versus maybe a little broader acting the medications are. So the biologics, the injectables are very targeted. They're all essentially blocking one cytokine each. When we think about the oral medications like the JAK inhibitors, we're acting a little more broadly. And so sometimes there are comorbidities like atopic comorbidities where we really do want to target that type 2 inflammatory process. On the flip side, sometimes people have comorbidities like inflammatory bowel disease or rheumatoid arthritis or things along those lines, and we may actually benefit from an oral medication like a JAK inhibitor in that case. Now, shifting gears towards the biologics, when might you favor lebrikizumab versus dupilumab as an example?
That's a great question. So lebrikizumab is really an effective medication, and it has a great flexibility with the dosing. However, it doesn't cover as many of those comorbidities that we talk about in the atopic space. So for patients with comorbidities, I would favor dupilumab. However, for patients that want more flexibility and perhaps be able to reduce the number and frequency of their injections, lebrikizumab is a great option.
Yeah, I think that often plays a huge role because when we think about treating patients, we are considering comorbidities and so on. But for patients, often they're more focused on practical considerations. How often do they need to inject? When can they expect, you know, the efficacy to kick in? And for some people, having the less frequent injections actually just makes a huge difference. What about tralokinumab? What kind of role does that play? When do you fit that into your treatment?
Tralokinumab is another great option for targeting IL-13 and Th2 inflammation. And it also has that flexibility with dosing. So it's really great as another option for us to be able to treat all of our patients.
Yeah, and I do think that one of the common trends when we're talking about whether it's IL-4, IL-13 blockade with dupilumab, direct IL-13 targeting with lebrikizumab or tralokinumab, and IL-31 targeting with nemolizumab, which we haven't really touched on yet, is that these are very safe medications. And so one of the things that I think often comes up with patients is that, you know, I mentioned the risk tolerance. Do you want something that has a very long established safe profile, or do you want a treatment that might maybe work a little quicker, but has at least potential risks? And for many patients, you know, they really want something that's safe. And then we're talking about nuances between the different options. With that said, what about nemolizumab? Where does that fit for you?
I'm glad you asked. So nemolizumab is another option for our patients. Like you mentioned, targets IL-31, and we think of that as a very important cytokine when it relates to itch, but also in Th2 inflammation. And it's a really great drug for targeting that itch predominant disease and very little injection pain. So another great feature of that medication, as well as the less frequent dosing that you can start at the every 4-week injection from the start. And I will mention that some of our newer medications also have less injection pain than dupilumab, although that's really been kind of a standard for a long time, that it's great that we have more options to get to our patients.
Yeah, so I definitely agree. And, you know, we're fortunate right now that even just speaking about biologics, setting aside oral medications like JAK inhibitors, we have a number of different options. And one of the benefits is being able to speak with patients and say, you know, we're going to come to a decision on where we start. But if this one doesn't work, if this is not the right one for you, we have other options as well. And I have certainly found that patients really, really appreciate knowing that it's not just one chance to get it right, that there are really excellent options to identify ultimately the thing that's going to help them and really clear their skin up in a safe and effective way.
And for patients who have had inadequate responses with injectables, JAK inhibitors have really been game-changing. So if we have a patient that's not responding adequately, being able to transition to a JAK inhibitor can be very impactful for patients. And like we mentioned, they can also cover comorbidities, which can be very helpful for our patients as well.
Yeah, exactly. And I think ultimately this really goes to that point really that we've been discussing, which is the individualized treatment is really key, and that shared decision-making to help understand, you know, from my perspective, but really from the patient's input, what are the factors that are most important to them. You know, from my perspective, there's no single best biologic for each patient, or really every patient. However, for each patient, there may be specific considerations that align really with what they're looking for, what their lifestyle is, what their comorbidities are, really, and their ultimate goals. And so I think we're really fortunate that we have these options. And generally speaking, as we progress and they're around for longer, you know, we're coming to understand better what the nuances are in treating patients with the different options.
Thank you for this discussion, Benji.
It's been my pleasure, Huva.
And thank you to our viewers for joining us.
And that's today's Specialist Spotlight. Thank you for joining this episode of PeerDirect Medical News Podcast. For more stories like these, visit us at peerdirect.com. Thoughts, comments, or suggestions, please leave us a review on your preferred listening platform or email us at editorial@peerdirect.com. Listen and subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also download our Amazon Alexa Flash Briefing, Medical News Roundup, or just ask, what's my Flash Briefing? Thanks today to our guests, Drs. Sisis and Unger. Join me next time for an episode where we cover the latest stories in the world of medicine.